Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today, who is off this week at the Republican National Convention. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Ian, we've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And the good one is not only from the convention, but it's not one of those, hey, something horrible happened to someone we don't like, so we're going to call that the good martini today, which obviously we've done quite a bit this year. There are some definite negative moments for conservatives and for the Republican convention that we'll get to later in the podcast. But much of the program, if people actually had the chance to watch the program instead of watching the talking heads at the cable networks or the broadcast networks, there were some powerful things going on the stage from a number of speakers last night. I thought Tom Cotton did very well. I thought Joni Ernst did quite well. Marcus Luttrell gave a very powerful presentation. Then there were two other things that I think that were really compelling. One was the families of people who have been killed by illegal immigrants who were let back into this country after being deported and weren't deported after committing a crime as an illegal immigrant, and in these cases, murder. And then the other issue, of course, was the Obama-Clinton legacy on national security. The theme of the evening was Make America Safe Again, and one of the speakers was Patricia Smith, the mother of Sean Smith, who was killed alongside Ambassador Stevens at the U.S. consulate in Benghazi 4 years ago. Here's a bit of what she had to say.
For all of this loss, for all of this grief, for all of the cynicism the tragedy in Benghazi has brought upon America, I blame Hillary Clinton. I blame Hillary Clinton personally for the death of my son. That's personally.
And so when you talk about the Clinton-Obama record on national security, obviously it's a disaster. It's something Republicans should be able to make a lot of hay out of. And had it gotten the attention it deserved, these could be very compelling issues, particularly given the complete failure of this administration, both Clinton and Obama, on these issues.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, what you had on display with these parents and others was a really powerful example of the ways in which ordinary citizens fall victim to progressive policies on a number of different fronts, whether it's law enforcement domestically or neglectful national security decisions or the rest. I mean, there are a lot of things that are not, directly caused by. I mean, I do sort of differ in the sense of I'm not sure Hillary Clinton is directly responsible, the way that Pat Smith makes it out. But you certainly see the ways in which these policies have negative consequences. And these were really sort of on the ground examples of that, Fast and Furious and other ways in which the policies that folks in the administration or Democrats in Congress think are these beneficent acts really extraordinary and tragic consequences for ordinary Americans. That was on display, and I think that's a powerful reminder. And to lawmakers, it should be a reminder that they ought to approach their jobs with some humility and remember that these things really do have on the ground effects. The reaction to this was really kind of gross. A lot of people sort of talking about how trotting these speakers out was sort of trafficking in the pornography of grief and this sort of thing. That's A, sort of laughable given what we're going to see next week at the Democratic National Convention, where we're going to have the mothers of Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, Freddie Gray go down the line talking. Secondly, as Jim pointed out in the morning jolt today, these are the same people who, when Cindy Sheehan was protesting the Iraq War and was, standing outside George W. Bush's ranch in Crawford, she was given, quote, absolute moral authority by, I think it was Maureen Dowd in the New York Times. So there's just real hypocrisy here when it comes to whose grief is, quote unquote, legitimate as a matter of public concern. So again, some powerful stuff last night, and then some hypocrisy this morning that I think is worth batting down.
Yes, absolutely. Chris Matthews said the speech ruined the night for the Republicans. And obviously, he's not there to be an objective analyst in any way. But the double standard, as you've pointed out very well, on full display. But that might have been some of the more compelling moments for the Republicans. Other points during the day, not so much. Let's go to yesterday afternoon and the vote on the rules package that set up how the whole convention is governed. There was an effort underway, as we found out Monday morning. You needed seven states, the majority of the delegations of seven states, to force a roll call vote on the rules package. And that's what some people who don't like Donald Trump and others wanted, because they didn't like what was in the rules package in a variety of ways. This pretty much led to chaos on the floor. Here's how it started after a roll call vote was denied and the presiding officer simply said that the ayes have it. I'm guessing there was objection to that, Ian, based on what was going on the floor. And it continued like this for minutes, even to the point where the podium and the chair was effectively vacated for several minutes. Turn on the Utah microphone, point of order. You had Mike Lee screaming from the Utah delegation. You had Ken Cuccinelli from the Virginia delegation throwing his credentials, slamming him to the floor, saying, "I am not doing this." Basically, what had happened, at least according to RNC officials, Ian, is that there was enough arm twisting from the RNC and from the Trump campaign in three of these delegations to get it to only six delegations with a majority wanting a roll call vote, and that did not meet the threshold. What's your take on this? Some are calling this, in the words of Bill Kristol, the Putin National Convention. Others say this is just how politics is done, and if you don't like it, well, that's probably not the game you should be in. What's your take on what happened on Monday?
First of all, I mean, it was just a shameful display. I mean, what you heard in the recording there was exactly what was happening when the chair says the ayes have it. It was so obvious that they were making the decision that they wanted to make. If you were watching this live, and if you go back and watch it, I mean, there's just no way not to be, to my mind, enormously disgusted by what was effectively just an iron-fisted approach from the RNC. It was a truly sort of shameful display. That said, perhaps the more frustrating part of it is that it was all done really, really without cause. In this sense, there were nine delegations that had followed the procedural rules to call for a roll call vote, and according to the rules, they should have been granted that, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. If that had happened, they would have gotten the roll call vote. There would have been an hour of modest embarrassment for the Trump campaign, as you know, a handful of delegates effectively said, "We don't like this guy," and then that would have pretty much been it. I mean, there really were no consequences. Otherwise, they didn't have the votes for a large-scale effort. It was largely a symbolic effort, given what happened in the Rules Committee last week. If you're Reince or you're the Trump campaign, what you did is effectively create a massive spectacle, perfect for broadcast news, that showcased or emphasized how chaotic the Republican National Convention is, and you wrote Hillary's ad. I mean, she plays that ad and says the Republicans can't even govern their own convention. How are they going to govern the country? I mean, it's right there in front of you, and it's so mind-boggling. If this effort had no hope, as the Trump folks said, as the RNC folks said, If it was just going to be a minor blip in, you know, the smooth road to this coronation, just have the vote, get it out of the way, smooth some people's feathers, and move along. But they created this disaster that now is going to be one of the key things that's remembered and emphasizes just how sort of irresponsible this whole nomination process was. And it's a particular irony that all of this happens on the day that they're emphasizing how Trump and company are the law and order folks in the campaign.
There's stories of RNC and Trump officials screaming at delegates saying that their political careers are finished if they persisted in this. So it was a pretty tense time in the lobbying on the floor. And I thought Mike Lee made a good point after all was said and done, is that, you know, unity's a two-way street here. You can't just stiff arm and body slam the people who came up short in the primaries and then just constantly berate them and then expect them to get on board with your campaign. The effort needs to be made to try to smooth over those feathers, and it's getting late.
I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to think that Donald Trump has done more to woo alienated conservative voters than he has to woo Bernie voters, I mean, at this point. And this convention is just a disaster thus far as those efforts to get back the Mike Lee style conservatives goes.
The highlight of night one was the speech from Melania Trump, who would be the next first lady if Donald Trump is the next president of the United States. It was a shorter speech, I think, than most current or potential first ladies have given in recent cycles. But for the most part, instantly, it was received fairly well, I think, on the floor and among conservative commentators, but pretty quickly there seemed to be an interesting thing popping up in the mainstream media, and then others caught on as well, and that's that it appears that several lines from this speech were actually lifted from Michelle Obama's speech at the 2008 Democratic National Convention, and here's a little bit of that mashup.
You work hard for what you want in life.
The values that you work hard for what you want in life.
That your word is your bond, that you do what you say you're going to do.
That your word is your bond, and you do what you say and keep your promise.
Because we want our children and all children in this nation to know that the only limit to the height of your achievements is the reach of your dreams and your willingness to work hard for them.
Because we want our children in this nation to know that the only limit to your achievements is the strength of your dreams and your willingness to work for them.
So then the mainstream media, every mainstream newscast this morning is leading with this, like this was some sort of heinous incident. And it's not good, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. Here's Paul Manafort, the campaign manager, earlier today explaining why this is no big deal. And if it is a deal at all, it's really Hillary's fault.
But, you know, again, there's a political tint to this whole issue, and you know, and certainly we've noted that the Clinton camp was the first to get it out there in trying to say that there was something untoward about the speech that Melania Trump gave. It's just another example, as far as we're concerned, that when Hillary Clinton is threatened by a female, the first thing she does is try to destroy the person. But it's politics. We recognize it, and we're just going to move on.
Ian, this is crazy on so many fronts. First of all, plagiarism, so stupid. You know, these days people are going to find it out. More importantly, why in the world would you plagiarize Michelle Obama? And then thirdly, the media frothing at the mouth and the Trump campaign just trying to pivot here as much as possible. What was supposed to be kind of the soft, unifying message of the evening in a night otherwise where the Clinton national security record was being indicted has been completely lost now.
Yeah, exactly. To start with, everyone, all the sort of pro-Trump people this morning are tweeting and, you know, writing, well, you know, Obama plagiarized Deval Patrick and Joe Biden plagiarized, you know, everybody. And okay, fine. They're all wrong. Don't plagiarize. It was wrong when Obama did it. It's wrong when Melania does it. You have now this situation where Chris Christie goes out and says, no, it was the 93% of it that was original was a great speech. That's not a defense. That's the most humiliating justification you could possibly offer. It's amazing to me. Maybe it shouldn't be amazing. Maybe I'm just naive, I guess. Still, it's amazing to me that we're at this point and the Trump campaign is making these basic, grievous misjudgments. I have very, very low expectations for this week, to put it mildly. One expectation might be to write your own speech, to put your own words in your own order, instead of pilfering words from the highest profile female speaker at a convention probably in the last 20 years. which would have been Michelle in 2008. I mean, this is just unbelievable levels of incompetence. I know it's in the long run, of course, it's not a big deal. And of course, this is Donald Trump's Trump U, and several other things under his name were plagiarized. And, you know, I mean, this is just sort of the way this whole operation works, has worked in the election season and worked in his professional life long before. But I mean, all you've done now is exactly what you said, Greg, which is swamp what was otherwise the 93% of which was a good speech. You've swamped that in this coverage about plagiarism, which the left is happy to bang on about without acknowledging those precedents that I mentioned. And you lost the whole cycle. These are such easy things to avoid. You know, if you were a conspiracy theorist, the self-sabotage angle on the Trump campaign is bolstered by things just like this. It's just unbelievable.
Incredible. Incredible. And she's got an interesting story. I mean, she grew up in communist Yugoslavia as a young girl and ultimately came to the United States. And she talked about how the greatest honor can be in this world is to be an American citizen. I think a little more attention to that and making a unique part of the story rather than focusing on the flowery language, which is always going to be in a first lady speech. But that, sure, that could have been a very unique part of the speech that I thought could have been emphasized a little bit more. But
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
No one's talking about that. Ian, talk to you tomorrow. We'll see what happens today at the convention.
All right. We shall see. Thanks, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review. In for Jim Garrity, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.